Hello, and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week in episode 14, our nobilis attempt to apprehend the root of the problem with fury. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hi, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Dasktir, Regent of Nothing and General Mess.
I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Lissa Crate, who just for today truly feels like the Duchess of Fury.
Also, I said Regent, not Regal, so I could just record that again if you want to replace it. That was a stupid thing.
Both actually apply.
Then so great.
If you're happy with Regent, then
Regent's
we're good.
Regent's good. Regent, Regal, so. Regulus, whatever. We got it.
Regulus of nothing.
Excellent. And thank you. Before we get started, let's briefly recap any character stat growth and the events of the previous episode for ourselves and our listeners. Do we have any XP expenditure this time around?
I think I'm saving my pennies.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, our recap this time goes to Lissa, if you would do us the honor.
I usually welcome nighttime visits, and Impatia's appearance in our room initially seemed to be no exception. She invited us on a stroll to commune with her god, Nyx. As we walked, I became concerned. Not only did Impatia seem like a devout follower of Nyx, even going so far as to claim that she was made to serve. But Nyx clearly has a vision for this land that does not leave room for its cultural heritage, or other gods for that matter. I resolved to let the matter lie. Impatia had been so hospitable after all, and the walk was mostly uneventful. We saw some beautifully wrought depictions of powerful beings that were part human, part animal. The rock from which these images were carved called out to me and even provided me with a break from my incessant discomfort. There was also a strange occurrence in the woods, a flare of fury that caught my attention and promptly transitioned to fear when I tried to make contact. Our arrival at Kilada should have been joyful. I've never seen such wonders, but their beauty comes at too terrible a cost. Impatia, as it turns out, was behind the attack on Fury, apparently at the behest of Nyx. And the happy, carefree people of this land are that way because they've had their fury cut out from them. And worse yet, Impatia asked us to help her. I made my displeasure known, and Impatia sat to meditate and commune with Nyx. As my anger grew, there came an answering flare of fury, followed by what sounded like the roar of a fearsome panther. We cannot choose what we are, but we can choose who we become. And, dear listener, today I choose to become a feeling incarnate.
That's an excellent note to start on. So, to lay the scene here, before our listeners, the discussion with Impatia had gotten not heated per se, but contentious, as she tried to make a case for Nyx's law of serenity. She had gone in some distress to try and commune with Nyx as the feline scream broke the silence in a twilight Kilada. And that's exactly where we pick up. And perhaps the first notable detail here to give us our kind of reactions is that Impatia does not react to the sound. She continues to sit in contemplation without any particular sign that she heard it, although she must have, according to what she told you, heard it, felt it, tasted it, smelled it, and so forth.
Well, I'm going to go in the direction of the sound.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, can we tell what direction that is? Probably. It was probably quite so distinct.
Das, you're actually having trouble because it was a high-pitched, loud noise in a canyon entirely composed of mostly flat surfaces of rock. And so, you know, kind of who knows. But fortunately, you're here with Lyssa, who can sense fury. And just like when whatever happened to Ivy happened up in the forest, there is an accompanying flare of fury, unlike the one that you passed on the way here, which was just a purely human rage. This is, you know, almost just kind of like an eruption of the inchoate spirit stuff of fury, which was more along the lines of what you felt when Ivy berserked.
Bared out.
Yeah. Put on her bear shirt.
Sure.
Lyssa leading the way. You hustle, presumably pretty quickly, towards the sound, which actually puts you against the flow of foot traffic, as those people who are still out and about are all hustling away from the sound. Fortunately, Lyssa is big. And so while this does slow you down, it does not stymie you entirely, or even all that much comparatively. And Dusk, as long as you stay directly behind her, you can draft, as it were, in her slipstream. The sound and the fury was coming from what, if you are facing the entrance to Kalata, you're looking back towards the temple from the entrance, would have been the right-hand side of the canyon. Although precisely how far right is a little harder to tell, it is most of the way back toward the entrance from where you were, so you hustle. This does give you a moment, especially once you kind of break through the crowds coming the other way, to talk or strategize if you'd like, but otherwise, if not, we can just zoom right there.
I probably mutter something about we have to stop her to Dusk.
I probably take a moment longer than is seemly, and then agree we have to stop her.
This would probably also be a good time to note that the two of you are not human entirely, but you have gone for well over 24 hours without meaningful rest, and you have probably walked a good mental geometry is not great, but a couple of dozen miles at least during that time. So you're feeling some wear and tear. There is a good possibility of me asking you for endurance rolls. You know, if you try to get up to anything more physically demanding than this kind of brisk jog that you're doing towards this sound. And all at once, you have arrived, or rather, the fury has arrived, because it's coming towards you as well in the last moment or two there. And sure enough, it is hard to miss the large, sort of sand-colored feline crouched on the roof of a nearby one-story building partway up the canyon wall. It is a little bit larger than the average Charaxan horse. And it doesn't have so much a mane as like a bristly ruff and large claws. And it's not quite like a saber-toothed cat, but its teeth are very prominent. This was true of the bear that Ivy became as well. It had unusually large and prominent teeth that would seem really impractical for a natural organism to have. Otherwise, though, it mostly does resemble a hunting cat. And it is regarding you from sort of a stalking crouch from on top of this roof, tail lashing low side to side, and a growl like an idling backhoe engine, sort of rumbling as it watches you somewhat warily, if twitchily.
I'm going to do a ghost miracle.
Okay.
And I'm going to kind of, once again, display my fury. But if I could make it appear in such a way that it takes on the form of the raging animals I've encountered so far. So there's like a bear, a cat, and also a snake for good measure.
Okay.
All with the noticeably long teeth, because I have definitely picked up on that.
Yeah, so you sort of ghost miracle. They're almost visual illusions, but they're almost more like the after image in your eyes of a strong emotion. And they sort of ripple in the air in front of you, and the cat hisses in a way that sounds much more like a serious plumbing problem than a cat noise due to its size and ferocity. And hunkers down in its crouch and starts kind of, you know, trying to survey all of the moving objects in its path. It seems on edge and alarmed by this. Dosk, are you taking any particular action?
I was going to ask you to what degree it's paying attention to me. Has it regarded me in any way?
Briefly. It is seeming to be in threat assessment mode.
Sure.
It is trying to keep its eyes on everything. And since you're not closest to it and you're not doing a lot of moving, it's paying relatively less attention to you. But, like, you're probably on its radar.
If it were to see me, it would see me assuming the aspect of nothing, even for a brief moment, and I would be gauging its reaction to that.
Okay. After you have used the aspect of nothing on it, it does not regard you again.
Okay.
Listen.
I am going to call out to it and say, we met Ivy, we know what's going on here, and we want to stop it. We're friends.
It does not give any particular sign of having understood you, although it also does not take any particularly hostile action, which seems like an act of restraint, given that you can directly sense the fury rolling off of this thing in waves, right? Like, keeping it still is actually kind of a Herculean task. At about that moment, however, a local woman in relatively fine clothing, nothing like what the Tears wear, back in Ferret, but, you know, seemingly relatively expensive, Diamacor standards, comes sprinting into the small open area before this house, and starts hucking rocks at this cat and screaming at the top of her lungs. Now, she is talking very quickly, which is something that is done in Diamach for emphasis. So it is hard to catch, but if you'd like to roll your language skill, you can try to catch some of what she's saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'll roll for sure.
I definitely will, too.
So that's 6 for Das, and how many?
3
for Lissa.
2 4s over here.
No sets.
Okay. Das, you are barely able to pick anything out of this whirlwind of human speech. But one thing is repeated often enough that you pick up on it after the second or third time, And part of what this woman is screaming at this cat is, let her go. The cat, being pelted by the rocks, immediately turns his attention to this woman, and right around the time, Dusk, that you are able to parse, let her go, the cat is sort of tensing to pounce on this woman. You have moments if you wish to react.
Time being of the essence, the first thing I do is I repeat the sentiment in a way Lissa can understand. I say, let her go, and I say it as loudly as I can so that the cat perhaps turns its attention to me.
Okay. And without the context, until Dusk yells it here, any action from Lissa?
I completely misunderstand who needs to be freed. A lesser creation of fury and the woman pelting rocks, but I try to redirect her fury away from the cat and towards the big sanctum of Nyx deep into the city.
Okay. Roll a command inspire to get the effect that you want from this fury. There is a minimum height requirement here.
2 sevens. I well assume done. I still had my master.
Yes, yes. Okay. I did not assess a penalty.
I know you said
it.
Okay. I know you said a maximum height, but I wanted to clarify. 2 sevens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no. A penalty would be assessed in an instance of something sort of unpredictable or complicating to doing the task, whereas a minimum height is just like you have to do it at least this well for it to work here. You know, and that's more what we're going with at this point. So, you create the fury, you know, in this woman at the Temple of Nyx and all that it stands for. And she looks kind of dazed for a moment, and the cat weeps. And I'm actually going to roll for the cat. And potentially for the woman. We will see. Ooh. Okay. The cat leaps from the roof. And remember, this is a cat maybe just shy of a Clydesdale. It impacts the woman, paws on her shoulders, bearing her to the ground, and by the time it has her on the ground, her head is in its jaws. She has not stopped screaming appreciations at the cat, though. And this is all happening very quickly, but actions, Dusk, then Lissa.
I'm having all of the exhalations that you're hearing in the space of a moment, of course, dear listener, because things are happening, as we said, very quickly. What does one do with nothing in a situation like this? Well, I suppose, here's what I do. I perform a creation of nothing so that the space in the cat's mouth, which does not contain jaws or anything dangerous, but is simply gaping maw, becomes larger. So the woman's head is not torn as asunder as it would be. It's simply in a space.
Okay.
You explode its jaw.
I do. If that's what happens, then that's what happens. But simply, the rules of Euclidean geometry, though Dusk might not have those terms, do not any longer apply to the inside of the cat's mouth. There is more nothing in there than there could or should be.
Okay. So this is one of those things where my instincts as a GM are a little bit in tension with the intent of the miracle rules in Nobilis.
Sure.
So, what I think I would like you to do is roll. Boy, this is going to be. It's a snap thing, so roll sense plus scrutinize, which is going to be four dice.
Okay. Is this me gauging how much nothing I need to create, or how much is already in there?
This is you trying to instinctively place the nothing that you are creating to protect this one.
Okay. We got a pair of sixes.
I have been playing Disco Elysium for the first time recently. So this is your visual calculus.
sure.
Although it does not have the extremely droll voiceover to go with it.
Oh, would that we could all sound like that guy.
I mean, this would immediately be the number one podcast on the internet if I could sound like that guy. I should look up that guy's name since I like his voice.
I don't know his name either, but yes, he's great.
Okay. Judging by the fact that this woman's head is clenched in jaws that contain an improbable number of teeth of improbable size, and is still screaming imprecations at this cat moments later, it seems to have kind of worked. Lissa.
I am, gonna do another lesser creation of fury. Realizing that I miscalculated the situation, and try to inspire it into the cat, but once again directed away from the lady, any direction, just not at the lady.
Okay. This would, I think, be another command inspire. And again, there is a minimum height.
Pair of eights.
Yeah.
Gotta love those master dice. Okay. The cat does almost immediately whip around to face in the direction of the back of the canyon where the temple is located. Does not let go of the woman first. Her stream of imprecations is not slackened, however. Dasky Miracle appears to still be mostly protecting her.
I imagine the imprecations being very resonant, since she's shouting into a cavernous cat mouth.
From the inside of this mouth. Yeah. Yep. Well, and she has started to, like, hammer her fists on the cat's head and, like, kick at its collarbone, you know, as she is kind of whipped around here. But there's precious little else that she can do for the moment. As the cat kind of reacts to this influx and redirection of fury from Lissa, you guys have time for one more action each if you want it.
I'm going to do a ghost miracle. Again, focusing on fury, but imagining that damage can only be done with a mouth, empty mouth, I guess. Like, actually, you know, let me change that. I'm going to say,
okay.
I'm going to do a ghost miracle of fury, but just like this urge to scream in rage. Because in order to scream, you kind of have to open your mouth wider. So we'll see if that works and try to inspire. Yes.
Okay. In this case, you will not have to roll because this is something the cat kind of wants to do anyway.
Yeah.
The cat opens its mouth, drops the woman who, you know, sort of unceremoniously, you know, just kind of puddles on the pavement for a moment without, again, doing more than pausing for breath in yelling at this thing. And the cat takes a deep breath and gives another one of these kind of blood-curdling yowls. Dask, any action?
Is the cat still in motion as it yowls? This is something I could notice split second.
It has paused momentarily to release this cry.
It has paused.
So while it has paused, I've having learned something from, you know, when Ivy was a bear, I managed to make her glitch out a moment while in full stride by increasing the amount of nothing in between her strides. I create a chasm of nothing in between the cat and the woman, making it momentarily, if not impossible, certainly more difficult for the cat to come at the woman again.
Okay. Let me...
And yes, I am challenging you to explain what that would look like, or if it would look like anything to a casual observer. But
flying cats.
I guess the question is, there are basically two ways that you could be envisioning this, and I'm trying to decide which one is going to end up happening with Dosk just kind of throwing this out there.
Sure.
Okay.
Can I tell you, would it help if I told you what I pictured, and then you can tell me how valid it is or how successful I am at it? So what I'm picturing is
I always want to know what you're picturing.
If I'm picturing that if the cat were to lunge at the woman at this moment, like let's say there's 100 feet between her and the woman, it's probably less than that. The cat would essentially leap 1,000 feet and continue, like stay suspended, but be moving through space that is not there and be unable to reach its destination.
This was something I was jotting down. This is the Jujutsu Kaisen superpower.
you are not wrong.
this is weaponized Xeno's paradox.
Sure. Yes. Yes.
So, a remarkably straight hairline crack appears in the sliver of pavement between the cat's paws and where the woman is laying on the ground. And the cat goes to run in the direction of the temple, which would take it over the woman, and it moves, and it covers ground, but it does not gain position. You are violating the laws of physics again, you naughty, naughty boy. but I did not strategically plan for you to be drinking beer when I said that, but I'm not sorry either.
You shouldn't be sorry. You probably got a wonderful sound on the tape.
This gives a moment's respite during which, Lissa, you get that feeling like when you have a big sneeze coming on, only it's your soul that has it. And then there is another eruption of fury, and the woman on the ground in front of the cat, in a kind of sickening sort of display, not a Cronenbergian, John Carpenter's The Thing body horror transformation, but almost like the space around her has become a colorless kaleidoscope, and it is genuinely hard for your human brain to look at something that violates space this much. In a matter of moments, her image has sort of like shattered in three dimensions, and sort of expanded, and then sort of standing there in front of this cat and growling very deep in his throat is a roughly hippopotamus-sized gray wolf. Of truly terrifying description, with the spiny ruff and the too many too big teeth.
So many animal friends.
This is one of those moments where being the regal of nothing, when you say there is such and such a thing before us, there's a part of my brain that wants to say, no, there isn't. That's my miracle. That said,
it took me a moment to remember to lean away from the mic while I was laughing, so.
Woof. Okay.
That said.
That being said.
It's a woof.
It's a woof.
It's a woof.
Another friend. It is shaped somewhat like a friend.
They are both friend-shaped.
I'm imagining now what Kirby would look like after stealing each of these powers. For, if anybody hasn't heard this, that's the thing about Kirby, right? Kirby is shaped like a friend. In any case, so this hairline crack of infinite nothing still extends between this cat and this wolf. And as the wolf clambers to its feet, the cat tries to launch itself at the wolf to no avail because of Dosk's miracle. So at least as long as that minor creation lasts, they will appear to be running across an endless, you could call it a courtyard maybe, toward each other in combative postures.
Why are they fighting each other?
I don't have the foggiest. I can keep them from colliding, but I can't stop them from whatever it is they're feeling.
And you shouldn't. I'm just... So they're both trying to get at the other.
Yes.
Damn it. This is not what I'm gonna once again do a ghost miracle of fury of all the animals, but include the wolf and the like residual vision.
Okay. The miracle takes, they are not paying any attention to it. They seem to be sort of tunnel visioned on one another, and Dusk, you're not sure how long this lesser creation is going to last. You know, it's localized and specific, but it's a lesser creation.
Why couldn't
the You do lady, have the courtyard to yourselves.
Why couldn't lady also been a cat lady?
Yeah, I was going to say, this woman who's shouting invective at the monstrosities, can we get her to safety and perhaps ask her what in creation is going on? How she's on the other side of this chasm in the laws of physics
that
I've created, right?
She is the wolf.
She is the wolf. She is the wolf. Yeah,
she is the wolf.
Of course she is the wolf. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. There's no way to unwolf her, at least at the moment. What do we do about this?
Well, I have slowed time down while you consider, but it has not stopped. Sure. So deliberate if you will, but know there is a cutoff.
I'm just going to do another lesser creation of fury and direct the fury at the Temple of Nyx again. In both of them.
You do feel the miracle take, but they are not affected by it. You channel some fury in that direction. But this is, this is what kind of nerd I am. If you are familiar with the scene in Avatar: The Last Airbender where Avatar Roku dies, you are trying to fight a volcano, and you're having an effect, but you are not stopping the destruction.
The despairing, possibly neurotic thought that I have as Dosk is anyone not an animal monstrosity? And I think that becomes a major divination of nothing where I feel out to see, is this just happening here or is this happening everywhere?
So by here, you mean in front of you or in this valley? Like, what are the parameters of your question?
I mean in front of me. I mean, is this a local phenomenon to near where Apatia was meditating, or is the entire valley going bestial?
Okay. So this is another one of those things where your miracle gets you information, but specifically information on
right.
On abs.
The question would be where isn't there a beast person?
What I would like from you is a knowledge plus lore roll of 7 dice.
Okay.
To interpret the information that you get in a way that is useful to you in this moment.
Okay. I want the listener to know Dez is spamming entertaining chats at us while we do this that are sometimes related and sometimes not. Okay.
It's been fun, especially trying to keep a straight face.
It's been a challenge. That is 3 sevens.
Lucky sevens. Wow. Okay. First, you're sort of overwhelmed by this, and you think for a moment that there are just a bunch of beast people in this large valley, not just the canyon, but in all of what appears to be all of Diamacore that you've seen. But what you realize as you process the information, as you bring your rational mind to bear on it, is you perceive the nature of the things in front of you through the information that you've gotten, and they're different, right? You are like, where isn't there a beast person? At first it seems nowhere. But what you've really gotten is there's nowhere that there isn't a beast. Beast people are directly in front of you. The other beasts aren't people yet.
That is somewhat opposite to the way I thought things progressed. Huh. I make an attempt to convey this to Lyssa, that it seems the domain of the beast people is limited, but beasts which may become beast people, may be impeopled at some point in the future, seem to be legion in this valley.
Did you hit your head?
If I did, then it was so hard I don't remember. I'm just telling you everything I know. What is happening?
I don't understand any of this. I thought that, you know, they just turned into animals when they were angry, but now you're telling me that there's beasts everywhere that occasionally jump into I don't know.
It seems possible that that when we see a beast person, it's a beast and a person, not simply a person who's big. Let me start over. I don't know what's happening.
I'm just going to do a divination of fury and see if I could sense any beasts in addition to cat girl and she-wolf.
This became so anime so suddenly.
Is this a lesser divination for free or a major divination for one miracle point?
This is going to be just like local to this, like the city.
Okay. All right.
I don't need to know about the entire valley. I just need to know about this particular area.
Okay. You don't sense any fury from your immediate area that isn't coming from you or this cat or this wolf.
So it seems to me that we need to get them to de-beastify and then have a conversation with them, maybe a drink, figure out what the hell is going on with our very limited grasp on this language. It's gonna hurt.
Understanding now that the beast people are dipartite, not merely people in beast mode and not merely beasts in people mode, but beasts and people at once. I perform a creation of nothing on both the cat girl, as the DM has officially designated her, and the she-wolf.
No, that was all Lyssa.
Like I said, the officially named by the DM, cat girl, and the she-wolf. I attempt to replace the catness and the wolfness of the cat girl and the she-wolf with nothing.
The catness? Ooh.
Yes.
The catra and the wolfra?
The catra, if you will. I try to decatra the cat.
Suddenly I have no control over this at all.
I wish I had a squirt bottle, because it's only now occurring to me that, like, shh, 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 like going over to catra and being like, shh, shh.
That's probably the best way to do it. Yeah. Just negative reinforcement. Yeah.
We need a squirt bottle and a big bone.
So in the absence of a squirt bottle and a big bone, what I do is try to remove the cat from the cat person and the wolf from the wolf person.
Sure.
Here's
a question.
Yeah.
Are you using a lesser creation or a major creation, and are you adding penetration to it?
It's a very good point. We don't so far have any real way to know whether we're dealing with an Octoritas. Is that right?
You do. It's been a minute, but Ivy,
that's right,
when she was a bear, had an Octoritas.
That is correct.
It was very weak.
It was.
So let's see. So a major creation would be at level 7. And then I would need to add penetration.
Which would be 2 miracle points for you, yeah, plus penetration.
And I am tapped out of domain miracle points, so I'd be doing some Rite of the Last Trump stuff. This would come at high cost. Mm-hmm. That said, it's probably important.
I will point out, and this is the sort of help that I give because I am a merciful and generous GM, that at your current level, you could do a lesser creation with 1 point of penetration without spending any miracle points. And then if that didn't work, you could try to upgrade it, having only lost some time.
Hail to thee, O merciful, beneficent Hollyhock God. Let's try that.
Hollyhock God, I'll be praised.
Blessed be his dice.
I wish. My dice are in no way blessed. They are always terrible. I tell the story sometimes. I played Warhammer 40K for a few years in junior high and high school, and that's a game in which you are rolling dozens of six-sided dice at a time. I have rolled 36 six-sided dice and gotten nothing above a 5 and only 2 of those.
Is there a way I could take you to Vegas but short you somehow?
Pay for my plane ticket and I don't know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
figure out the probabilities of it. But in any case, you try the lesser creation with 1 level of penetration. And the penetration does get through. The lesser creation of nothing is not quite enough to immediately snap them back. But you feel that you could kind of keep this up and overtake the rate of fury with this nothing. Just doing it for a couple of seconds, though, is taking absolutely all of your attention. Like, you genuinely are not aware of your surroundings right now. So, up to you whether or not you want to stay in that place.
Would I be able to mumble something to Lyssa while basically staying in the state? Would I have to snap out of it and then snap back in for a moment? Just so she knows what I'm up to.
Yeah. You would kind of have to disengage and be like, okay, here's what's going on, and then go back.
I'd snap out, probably not as long as I need to, and say something along the lines of, I think I can in nothing them. And then I snap back in and continue to spam nothing at their bestial nature.
Okay. When you snap back out, you notice that the barrier that you had put between them has faded. And so they are currently attacking one another. Fortunately, they're both big monster animals and tough as nails, and so you snap back in and you start this process. Lyssa, anything in particular you're getting up to at this point?
Dusk seems like he's doing something, and that something is requiring all of his attention, so I'm just gonna make sure that the big beast battle royale doesn't roll in his direction.
And I mean, it kind of does, but you are prepared for it, and they're not paying a lot of attention to you, so you can kind of, like, you know, just kind of scoot him a little bit out of the way, and you know, you don't have any real problems manhandling Dosk.
The image I had was she picked me up by the head and just moved me.
Like a chess piece.
Yeah.
So after an interval where both animals have ended up kind of, you know, bloodied but not seemingly seriously injured, they suddenly just kind of, like, there's an almost audible pop as the air rushes back into the space where these animal bodies used to be. And then crumpling to the ground are the woman who was yelling at the cat, and where the cat was, a girl of about 6 years old, who is wearing sort of like a slightly mud-stained set of leather long sleeve and long pant clothes, and has kind of they're both unconscious currently. Dusk, you sort of snap out of it and you feel a lot worse for wear. The whatever Apatia did for you guys to get your fatigue to leave you alone for a while is definitively over now.
We need to get these two someplace safe until they wake up. I'm already picking up the little girl, kind of like hoisting her on my hip. And then once I have her kind of secure, I'm also trying to, like, fireman carry the other lady.
I am making a show of helping in some way, but I'm keenly aware that I'm not actually any help with the physical
carrying. What do I need to roll for that? I saw you looking through my stats there.
Yeah. So at this point, that would probably be vigor at some point, but at this point it's endurance because you are running on empty. So that's going to be 5 dice.
A pair of fours.
You know, that'll do it. You managed to get them both up, and you feel kind of like you spent the night getting run over by trucks, but you have them both up, and you set your jaw, and you look around for a place to take them. You, as newcomers here, honestly don't really know where to go.
Is anyone in evidence to ask where to go?
They all ran from the cat, so there is nobody around.
Anything that looks like it might be an inn.
Well, or you remember seeing some. Yeah, you remember seeing some that were pretty clearly lodgings back toward the entrance, which you're pretty close to at this point. And back toward the main drag. So you head away from the canyon wall toward the middle, and back to the gates. And sure enough, you actually come upon a crowd, kind of lurking, as it were, in the sort of main thoroughfare, all kind of like looking to see what's happening, especially now that it's been quiet for a few minutes. And as the two of you, with Lissa's burden of this woman and this child, sort of come into sight, people start gasping and muttering, to each other. And Diamok, as you head to what the building that is most clearly some kind of inner tavern, and you, Tosk opens the door for Lissa, who has to kind of like duck in a little bit. And there is an elderly fellow with a extremely clean, extremely starched white apron on, sort of standing, leaning against the bar and kind of looking out the windows. And when you come in, he sort of straightens up and rattles off something in Diamach, if anybody wants to try to roll to understand him.
Yeah, I mean, I'll roll. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also rolling.
That would be 6 and, I believe, 3.
Pair of fours.
Nice.
We've got a pair of sixes. No, excuse me. One of those is a 9. Why do I do this? I am not a smart man. Pair of 5s, actually. I'm not a smart man, I know what love is what I'm saying.
Genuinely tricky to tell sometimes. Lissa, he stands upright when you come in and looks at you and says, "What are you?" And then pauses and says, "Oh no, it was them?" And then gestures to you and says, "Hurry!" Bustles toward the stairs. He's old enough that it is surprising how spryly he moves, but he is leading you up to the rooms. Where he shouts something that you can't parse right away, but turns out to be names. Two young women that, looking at them, you think it's probably a pretty good guess that they're his granddaughters, appear and help him get both the woman and the child into beds in a room, and the granddaughters sort of fetch pitchers of water and cloths and start kind of cleaning them up because they are still bleeding where their wounds were when they were beastified. They seem to be in relatively good hands now. At which point the older man turns to the two of you, primarily to Lissa since you were the one carrying them, and asks, what happened?
In my best effort to speak the language, I will try to say they turned into wolf and giant cat. And I probably don't get the words right, because I don't think wolf would have come up, so I probably would say dog instead.
You manage to, but using a mixture of words you know and gesture, convey the idea. Inelegantly, perhaps, but communication happened.
And then I say, we want to help, but don't understand what's going on.
The man nods in a sort of resigned way and motions you down to the common room, and heads behind the bar, puts two extremely fine crystal glasses on the counter, and pours a wine so dark it is almost black into both. A fairly prodigious amount, given that this seems to be a sort of special occasion. Sort of leans on the counter, gesturing at you to take the glasses, and says, in short, we don't know. The sort of brief pause that he takes after that seems to convey a mountain of weariness. And he sort of rubs his head and says, these are the first in the city. The others have been outside. He seems to have understood that you guys are new to the language, and so is trying to speak slowly, which is still kind of fast for your ears, but using relatively simple language. And he just says, sometimes people change, and whether we get them back or not. And he shrugs.
They sometimes stay as an animal?
He sort of nods noncommittally. He says, that's what we think. And generally the ones that don't turn back, we don't see.
And when they do turn back, what turns them back?
He spreads his hands and then shakes his head and says, it is not known. Sometimes people say they see Mistress Apatia. Sometimes they say no such thing. Sometimes when we find them, it is late.
Late how?
He sort of squeezes his eyes shut and says, they are dead. Although you've never actually heard the word dead before in Diamok, you can tell that's what he means. From the context and his tone.
In my best Diamok, which is probably quite bad, I say, and when they do come back, do they stay back better?
His eyes widen a little bit, and he says, yes, do you think they could change again?
I wave off the idea vigorously. If you've not seen it, then certainly not.
He looks a little bit reassured.
We don't know what's going on. We just know that Lady Apatia mentioned that she was having to fix people and remove fury from them.
He furrows his brow, and at first you're not sure if it's because of your lack of facility with the language or because of you know, his sort of unfamiliarity with the idea, he sort of shakes his head slowly and says, "You are new to Diamok and are speaking, but Mother Nyx, Mistress Apatia, they are peacemakers." This, he sort of leans back a little bit and gazes kind of between your shoulders and over them and says, "I am old. I remember the tail end of the time before. It was chaotic, frightening. Kilada would not have become the city it is now. It is better." And he sort of shrugs a little bit and says, "And it is a law, like any other, really."
"A law?"
"Against feuding.
For any reason."
He nods, he says, "There are courts now. Informal in the villages." This is starting to strain your ability to kind of follow him, but context is helping, especially in your conversation with Apatia earlier. He says, and, you know, uses gesture to help. "They travel, hear cases, suits. People accept their rulings. The step that some disliked was the disavowal. You know of it?"
"The disavowal?"
"Disavowing."
He nods.
"What?"
He says, "Most were happy to see the end of the fighting. Everyone, when I was a boy, had someone who they had lost to a revenge killing, to a feud, to a raid. But it was another thing to declare the ancestors not to be revered." He sort of struggles to express that last idea to you. "To stop maintaining their monuments, and to push off," he gestures, and then repeats the word for disavowal, "their legacy. To say, this never was right." And he kind of nods, you know, as though that is the best that he can say it in the language that he thinks you'll follow.
"We are like Apatia, but..."
His eyebrows climb almost to his hairline.
"But not for Nyx."
You sense, in the slight twitch of his face, a bare hint of reproach for using Nyx's name without the title. But he doesn't say anything. He says, "Not for Mother Nyx." And he sort of scratches his head. "For who?"
I look at Dosk. He's better at this language than I am.
It's true.
Running through Dosk's eyes is the question for the best gender-neutral way to describe Mott as a parent but not a parent, a god but not the only god, an authority but not the supreme authority. And finally, I settle on simply Mott, the Obsidian One.
You struggle through it.
I'm sure I don't know the word obsidian, so I probably say Mott, the dark stone parent.
he tracks you as well as you could hope. And he sort of tilts his head from side to side and says, "It makes sense, a kind, for there to be others like Mother Nyx and other places. Always she has been the one who looks after Dia Makor." He nods with a little more confidence and he says, "You have truly come a long way." And have you guys been drinking your beverages?
I most definitely have. Oh yeah.
I thanked him when he poured it and started gamely sipping it.
He tops you off wherever you are. He fills you back up to where you were at this point.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like delicious dirt. And no, I will not elaborate on that.
No, I wasn't.
I mean, I said delicious dirt.
I almost made a kissy noise to indicate chef's kiss, but I didn't want it to just sound like a kissy noise. So
fair enough. Yeah. He sort of looks off to one side and sighs and says, "There were travelers," and he gestures to give the meaning to his further phrase, which you take to mean "from inland," "when I was young. They haven't come in some time, since well before Mistress Apatia arrived. But no one from your direction, I don't think, or at least not that I knew of when I was a boy." He sort of takes on a considering look and says, "What has brought you?"
"We had no choice but to come."
"His family trades."
He sort of parses for a moment and, and he looks very interested all of a sudden and points at the glasses and says, "My specialty."
"These are lovely."
"Truly. The closest word I know in Diamach for exquisite or sumptuous, I come up with, and that's probably, what is it? It's probably more like the word for a pleasant spring day." something. It's wrong, but it's vivid.
I was going to say that you probably end up with comfy.
Yeah, there we go. This is extremely comfy.
He nods, understanding your limitations in his language. And he sort of, you know, looks and says, "I have three," and there's a word there, but he's gesturing to like a cask when he says it, so you think that's probably what he means, "that I could send with you if you have a way to carry them, if you have goods. This is the place for them." But he sort of waves his hand. He says, "It can be hard to tell, but I think it's getting on to evening. Do you need dinner? I will have regulars soon." Again, you supply regulars from context and gesture more than anything else.
I think we'd be foolish not to accept food and bed. Yeah.
And I hold my hand out and like in a greeting handshake gesture and say, "My name is Lyssa."
He shakes your hand gladly, although he seems amused by the somewhat exotic, I suppose, custom. And introduces himself as Ormet.
I greet Ormet in the same fashion, and I play it up as though this handshaking business is a very big deal where we come from, and he should have the full experience.
He sort of smiles at the introductions and welcomes you to Kilada, shows you to your rooms, and supplies you with some bowls of very savory stew. Um, if there is anything in particular you would like to do or get up to before you drop into unconsciousness with the force of 1,000 bricks.
Can I check on the two, the cat girl and she-wolf, and make sure that they're doing okay?
Certainly. They are still out, but they are being tended diligently by Ormet's presumed granddaughters. They seem to want for nothing and have been made comfortable, so not too much to report.
I attempt another drive-by anchor communication. It has never before occurred to me to try and communicate with Uncle Melly in this fashion, but I reach out to see if I can.
It comes worryingly naturally.
I am stunned only for a moment at what's happening, and then I describe, of course, with his mouth, the drink that we just had, the wonders of the city. I describe clockwork as best I can, and perhaps even make his mouth make a tick-tock, tick-tock sound. And I indicate, only after doing all this, that this is Dosk speaking.
Roll charm plus graces, 5 dice.
You bet I will. Two ones.
So you end on, oh, this is Dosk speaking, and there is about a half second of dead, still silence, during which you take in the fact that Uncle Melly is currently seated at the head of a banquet table with many of the heads of trade in Theret staring slack-jawed and open-mouthed at him. And he mutters, almost inaudibly through clenched teeth, the Taraxan equivalent of, "What the fuck, nephew?" And then smiles reassuringly. It's uncanny because you can feel his face, your face, smiling, and see his field of vision move as he nods, you know, reassuringly at everybody down the table. And sort of, you know, raises his glass in, you know, sort of a salutary manner, and then sits back down.
I yeet back into myself.
Marvelous. Lissa, anything in particular you're getting up to after you check in on the two animorphs recovering in their bed?
I'm also probably going to pay Varric a visit. However, I'm going to do a slight nudge before I actually show up, just in case he's indecent or drunk off his mind.
We can nudge. You're not telling me this, but this not only has not occurred to Dosk, it has not occurred to Drew either.
I'm attempting to nudge. Okay, or not, fair that's enough. A possibility.
Yeah.
So what the nudge looks like is basically that you slide partway into his awareness, but you're not using his senses yet, and you basically say in his mind something like, "Are you decent?" And you hear him say aloud, "This is a girl. Is that you? Where are you?"
I take that as a indication that he's decent and just kind of go fully into his awareness and... Mm-hmm. What do I see? I don't respond immediately. I'm gonna check around.
He is, in his quarters. He is, caring for some of his, smithing tools and equipment. Specifically, he is, treating some leather gloves, to keep them from cracking, and, otherwise has a tankard, mostly empty of ale, but he feels relatively clear-headed. You don't have any of the telltale signs in your perception through his eyes, through his body, of overt drunkenness. He seems to be having kind of a quiet evening in this regard.
Once I realize that he's by himself, I say, I almost made a mistake.
He quirks an eyebrow, which you can't see, but you can feel, because it's your eyebrow at the moment. And he says, oh, hell, we all make mistakes, girl. How bad could it have been?
There's no good way of describing it without giving you a bit more context. So I thought that someone here that's like me, but working for someone who is not the Obsidian God, was taking away people's feelings, but I'm pretty sure that she is just trying to prevent them from being possessed by animals that would transform them into rage creatures. And I almost sent a 6-year-old girl that was a rage creature in her direction.
There's a brief but extremely deep pause. He says, sounds like you've been busy. That's heavy. But it sounds like you didn't make the mistake. It sounds like you did just fine, really. Is the girl all right?
Seems to be.
Well, what's the harm then? You almost made a mistake, but you didn't make it.
But I still may make the mistake, just not with her. If the animals or whatever these things are the only source of fury around here, and what the girl who is like me that works for a different god is doing is what's causing me the pain.
He nods slowly, which again you feel because it's also your head. He says, sounds like a right bastard of a situation, really. But I think you'll see a way clear. I was there, you know. And he just kind of trails off. But he says, and I still think you'll do the right thing given the choice. You should trust your judgment more.
I don't know, because sometimes my judgment gets clouded and suddenly I lose my temper.
He chuckles a little bitterly. He says, I've seen it. But the thing is, I've never seen you mad about something you shouldn't have been mad about. Sometimes it gets out of hand, and he pauses, and you actually he tries to hide it, but you feel his shudder as he remembers. But he continues and says, it's all about directing it to the right place, making sure that your fury has a target. I don't think you'd be you without getting angry at things that deserve it. I mean, I remember why you came to me, but it just means you can't be impulsive about it. You gotta make sure when you feel your fury rising, you know who it should be directed at. I don't know if it makes any sense, really. Just an old man.
Well, you've never steered me in the wrong direction.
Well, I don't know. I made you a smith when... Well, he could have been a lot more than that, but... I'm flattered you think so.
And speaking of, I've got a few new tricks to show you when I get back, and I'll try to grab you some of the amazing things here. I think you will...
Oh, at the forge! Well, I look forward to it. I hope we'll have some downtime. He has finished with the gloves while you've been talking. He sort of sets them on the table and takes a swig from his stein.
Thank you, Varric.
If I can't be of help to you, what a good am I, lass? You're the demigod here. Ha! Never thought I'd say that.
You and I both. And, let's just stick to lass for now.
Well, you'll never have to worry too much about that from me. I saw you burn yourself at the forge too many times to be in too much awe of you, but I am impressed with what you've become. So, just know that when you're not feeling like you can trust yourself, I still trust you.
That's enough. Thank you. And then I just go. I eat myself back into my own body before I have to feel feelings.
Being back in your own body does not save you from feeling feelings, but it does save Varric from experiencing them firsthand.
You would return to Dask snickering and saying, are you back? It's never been with so little effort that I've ruined a banquet.
Oh, I've got to hear about this.
Presumably, you tell a couple of amusing anecdotes as the two of you very quickly drift off to sleep. It's actually relatively early in the night by the time you fall asleep, but you really need to sleep. And the next morning, you are awakened. Dask, you are awakened by Lyssa sitting up sharply in bed. Lyssa, you are sitting up sharply in bed because someone has poked you in the face. And this has alarmed you. You jerk around to see who it was, and it's the 6-year-old girl who was a monster cat the other day, standing by your bed, having her finger just kind of like slowly withdrawing as though she's realizing that maybe she shouldn't have done that. She looks a little bit nervous as you sort of stop hyperventilating and focus on her.
Once I realize it's her, I smile at her and say, "Hi, how are you doing? I'm Lyssa."
That is all pretty easy. I'm not going to make you roll for it. You can get that much out just fine. And she speaks barely intelligibly, in the way that children are kind of hard to understand unless you spend a lot of time around a single one and get their mannerisms down. But she introduces herself as Imbi. And then looks around real quick and holds out her arm locked at the elbow with her fingers splayed towards you.
I take her hand.
Yeah, she sort of smiles a little nervously and then wags her hand from side to side real fast and then pulls it back.
I do the same thing, just like it's the most normal thing in the world.
From across the room, I say, "Dask," and waggle my hand in her general direction.
She sort of like gives you a very shy wave, and you realize that you probably look at least as intimidating as Lyssa because you have just slept on your hair, it is very unruly. It is lighter outside than it was, but even what appears to be mid-morning in Kilada does not appear to be amazingly bright. And Imbi starts to speak very rapidly and not amazingly loudly, and with sort of a soft articulation due to her age. So you only catch a few words, but you gather that she is telling you what Ermet told her about the two of you when she woke up. And there is a mumbled thank you in there. And then while she is still rattling off the last couple of words, she turns around very quickly and runs out of the room. seeming to be a little shy and self-conscious. A moment later, the woman, who was the wolf, comes in and makes a hand gesture that you find kind of inscrutable at first, but in context seems to be maybe some kind of equivalent in Diamacore to like a bow. And she speaks very slowly for one of the locals, which means that she's speaking at approximately the rate a Taraxin would speak to a stranger. And thanks you very formally. She introduces herself as Onela, and thanks you for saving her and her daughter. And then makes the gesture again and withdraws.
Adorable.
A relief.
I want to adopt them both.
I was already relieved that they'd not torn each other apart, but knowing the familial connection, I'm glad things worked out.
Me too.
In an appropriate interval, the two of you rise, wash in a basin, get some breakfast. Anything in particular you would like to do with your mid-morning to midday?
Aside from trying to clean myself up and make sure I don't look like someone who has wandered in the wilderness for several hours straight
prior to picking up
a fight before giant animals, you know, like the usual.
Yeah. None of that should be in evidence, yeah.
Good news. Urmet is not running a seaside inn, and so does have heated baths that you are able to use. While you are bathing, there are several bathing rooms, so you are both able to go at once. Urmet has sort of run his establishment this morning out of consideration for the two of you. You're sort of the heroes of the hour, you know, as far as he's concerned. So you get priority for bathing. While you are bathing, it's very pleasant. You are so glad to be clean. But then, all at once, at a moment, in addition to feeling the steamy warmth of the water, and smelling the fragrances that they've, you know, sort of put in it, unfamiliar herbs, you can also see the fragrances and taste the water and smell the light in the room. It appears that you can only infer you have gained the direct attention of Mother Nyx. And that's where we'll end our session for today.
Woo!
Woo indeed.
So that concludes this session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll all join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on Twitter as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell. Say goodbye to the kind folks at home, players.
Thank you for listening, and dear Mott, I can hear my hair.
Thank you for listening. I don't have a good follow-up to that, so I'm just going to instead say that give yourself grace if you make mistakes.
Yeah,
good advice, just genuinely good advice. And as the poet once said, the wound is where the light comes in.
Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in, and stick around through the admin stuff. There's a heartfelt Lissa's line waiting for you at the end of it. The songs in this episode, Theme of the Dice Punks and its acoustic version, were written and recorded by the Regal of Nothing himself, Drew. Cover art is by Joanne, illustrious spookmistress of our recent Halloween one-shot. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by Robin, the player behind Lissa, the irrepressible Duchess of Fury. Rain and the one-roll engine it runs on were created by Greg Stoltzy, whose work can be found in, well, a frankly astonishing number of cool places, but I'll point you toward gregstoltzy.com. Nobilis was created by Jenna Catherine Moran and can be found alongside much of her other really intriguing work both in and outside of tabletop role-playing at afarandsunlessland.wordpress.com. Links to both systems and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, well, that's reward enough on its own, really, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
Can be a little bit overwhelming to feel, but don't fight it. Just give yourself just the space to sit in the moment, feel your feelings, and I'm sure it'll be less overwhelming soon.